He's here every Wednesday night, hour two, for an open conversation with me. No rules. We just wing it. It's the great Jay Mariotti. He's on the Dino Costa Show one more time on this Wednesday, May the 27th. Mr. Mariotti, how are you tonight?
I'm great, Dino. It's been 3 months since I talked to you, and I said, Dino, do you have your mask? And you paused and said, what do you mean, do I have my mask? I said, the coronavirus. And you went, oh, the coronavirus. Then 2 weeks later, we're on doing play-by-play on Rudy Gobert night. Remember
yes,
that?
Yes, I do. Yes.
You are literally delivering to me what's on TV. You say, Jay, I got to interrupt you. I'm watching this game, and they're shutting down the game. That was landmark radio we delivered that night.
And we've been going every week since, man. And more and more people have joined us and are really loving these conversations that we have, Jay. And glad to have you back on here tonight. I guess we could go in. Hey, this is the first night, I think. Although I think that we're probably going to get into this at some point because there's still some residual ripple effect waves that are coming off of The Last Dance. But we covered it, for five straight weeks when it was on, and I don't think it's going to be as big of a focal point tonight during our discussion, but I'm sure we're going to get into it at some point. But the baseball thing, Jay, I want to start here because I don't want them to play if it means playing under such a draconian system. It's almost like a twilight zone. I don't want to, and I've made this clear to my audience, I'd rather they just, scrap the season, come back in 2021. But now they want to go forward, of course, and now this is coming down to, of course, in the end, always money. The economic realities of the game certainly have changed dramatically over the last couple of months. I blame the players here more than I blame the owners, Jay. If they want to get back on the field and they want to make something this year, then you know what? Bite the bullet. Understand that we are living in unprecedented times, and we're fortunate that we can get them on the field to make something this year rather than nothing at all. The choice is theirs, but I don't think we're going to have baseball this year. That's my position right now.
Well, I don't think we're going to have it because the clock is ticking and they continue to fight over money no matter whose side you're on. See, I'm on the side of the players for the simple reason that I cannot swallow the idea of Mike Trout, whose full season salary is almost $38 million, first taking a hit down to $19 million, now under the latest proposal taking a hit to $5.7 million. I cannot fathom that at all. This is your very best player. This is why people would want to come back and watch baseball in the middle of a pandemic. And as an aside, this is Mike Trout, whose wife is pregnant, is due in August, and has already said, I'm not going to play if we don't have daily testing. So they're going right after the superstars, which to me is idiotic. If you're that much in dire straits economically, Dino, and you're still, as the owners, willing to fight this age-old battle in the middle of the biggest health crisis this world has seen in eons, I can't have any respect, really, for either side at this point, and I'm with you. If they don't get this figured out financially by the end of this week, how in the world are you going to play an 82-game season? The testing protocol seems iffy at best. They're doing it out of Utah. That gives me great confidence. Is it going to be run by the same guy, Jordan's pizza guy in Utah? I mean, what is going on? You don't have a professional operation close to you at Major League Baseball that could be monitoring the testing. So in addition to what you're talking about, I see several players already saying, of course I'm going to keep spitting. I'm going to keep chewing my tobacco. Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies said it. You're not going to get these guys, millennials, Gen Zers, agreeing to these draconian policies. They want to take showers at the ballpark. They don't want to be in their uniforms like mom picking them up at Little League. All of these rules, they're not going for. And as we talked last week, we have rules on the field that are going to defy common sense just playing the game of baseball. So I'm with you. I don't see it happening. And I'll tell you what, if they don't play this year because of finances in the middle of a pandemic, this could be suicide for the sport long term. That means they don't get back until next spring at the earliest. As it is, you've got ratings issues, you have length of game issues, and now next year the CBA runs out. This sport could be extinct before you know it, and somebody there is going to have some common sense. and get this thing rolling. And if it turns out to be the owners have to bite the bullet, let them bite the bullet for a change.
Well, you're right, and I think in much of what you say, Jay, you know, someone told me earlier today, somebody who's close to the game commented to me that sometimes the best work between these two sides comes in the final hour, at the, you know, and hopefully maybe they'll be able to put something together. But look, here's where I come down on the side of the owners more than I do the players. You know, as I've articulated to my audience a couple different times this week, you've got, if they're going to play the games without any audience, I mean, you are taking out ticket buyers, you're taking out suite sales, you're taking out parking, you're taking out concessions. I mean, this accounts for just about, Jay, 50% of all of the revenue that these teams take in. And when you have that much being sucked out of the equation financially, you know, I don't think there is a franchise in Major League Baseball this year, Jay, even if they go and the owners and the players arrived at a decision to play by the proposal that the owners have submitted. I don't think there's an owner that finishes in the black this year. They're going to finish in the red anyway. And so I think because of the unprecedented nature of this, and because the players need to be cognizant of the fact that there is the economic model has been slaughtered, at least for this year, that to get back on the field and to make something of the season, it's better to make something than nothing. And look at everybody, the owners are biting the bullet, the players are going to have to bite the bullet, the fans are certainly biting the bullet. And so do what is in the best interest of the game itself. But when we talk about the Major League Baseball Players Association, I mean, all you've got to look at is the way that the NHL has been run and the way that Bettman has been able to shepherd that league forward through this unprecedented time in our history. And they're on the precipice of starting their season with an agreement between the management and the players there. And the petulant nature, you know this, you've been around all four major sports during your career, Jay. I think you'd agree with me. Baseball players are the most entitled, arrogant pricks that are out there, and they're spoiled and they're pampered, and they're unlike NFL players, NBA players, or certainly NHL players. But look, at you want to get on the field, play. You don't want to get on the field and you want to continue to harangue over every last dollar and cent. And you know something? You're right, Jay, what you said. They risk injuring this game long term. Low World Series ratings, low playoff ratings, a disconnect with the youth in this country, in this quick twitch society. The game is, it takes too long for many people. There's a huge cultural disconnect going on. It's been going on for a long time. If the players are too stupid not to see this themselves, then you know something, they deserve what they're going to get in the end, which means that less and less people are going to be interested in their sport.
Well, the owners dropped the bomb this week, you know, when they should have just gone into it more lightly. They were negotiating this week as if there was no pandemic. Why not say, hey, look, we need to get started here, we need you in spring training. Well, why deliver this bomb that all these superstars are going to have to take 85% pay cuts? You know, that just blew me away. There was a better way of doing that. They could have tiptoed into it. This is no time to be dropping bombs. And I think that's where the union went, no, we're not going to do this. I'll be very curious what the union does to come back. If the union truly cares about the sport and the fans, they're going to say, let's make a public relations gesture and say, hey, look, guys, you came into this the wrong way. We want peace. So we're going to accept maybe a 60% pay cut for Mike Trout and Gerrit Cole. And I know, Dino, the common guy out there right now, we have 40 million jobless Americans. It looks bad for the players right now. But coming into this, excuse me, from the players' end, I would be offended that the owners are trying to make Mike Trout look like the bad guy here. If he doesn't accept an 85% pay cut, he looks like a bad guy. See, to me, that's low ball in kind of dirty pool negotiating. I wish the owners had not gone into this the way they did back in, and I was in the middle of this back in 1993 and 94. When the owners, I'll never forget Reinsdorf in the back of the press box in Chicago, the White Sox have the best record in the American League. It looks like they're going to go to a World Series. And he says, I'm going to be a hawk, quote unquote. And he didn't mean Harrelson. He meant, I'm going to be a labor hawk. And he and Bud Selig, they first ran out Fave Vincent as commissioner, and then they declared war on the union, and you saw what happened. No World Series. and it took the sport years to come back from that paltry attendance figures, bad TV ratings. It took a scam of a home run derby in 1998, Sosa and McGuire, for baseball to come back. Dino, that was an ugly period. And this time around, if we shut down baseball this season and they play next season and then shut down because they can't agree in a collective bargaining agreement, I don't think the fans are coming back the next time around. They're going to say, the hell with you. I love my NFL. I love my NBA. I love my college football. Your sport is dying anyway. Too many scandals. The games are too slow. Average age is 60. It's my granddad's sport. And I think baseball is really playing with fire.
Well, in relation to what you just said about the upcoming round of new CBA talks after next season, Jay, I think much of the players' thinking mentality going into this in terms of negotiating this specific deal now is being done with an eye cast toward what the final results of this negotiation will do to impact the upcoming negotiations after the 2021 season.
Well, they don't trust the owners. And history tells you, Dino, not to trust the owners. This is typical of what the owners do in every negotiation. They're going to, again, drop a bomb on the players. Don't do that now. Nobody is in the mood for bombs right now. And the players are thinking, gee, if we give in to these guys now, they're just then going to take in a year and a half. And Tony Clark is new to this. This goes back to Donald Fehr. You see Donald Fehr now running the NHL Players Association. It's interesting that he and Bettman have a much better relationship than Donald Fehr ever had with Bud Selig and Jerry Reinsdorf back in the 90s. Reinsdorf would call Donald Fehr names. I haven't heard Gary Bettman say anything derogatory about Don Fehr, which tells me that Bettman is far more interested, and granted, his sport does not have the revenues, not nearly the revenues of Major League Baseball, but Bettman has always, you know, they've had their own labor issues in the NHL. They had a lockdown several years ago that affected that sport for a while. But right now, I think a commissioner, a union director, they'd be foolish to have high stakes negotiating right now when nobody in this country is in the mood for it.
Well, very true. Very true. It's 16 minutes after the hour. The great Jay Mariotti with me this hour as he joins the show, hour number two, every Wednesday night. Listen, Jay, I've spoken with people and that are close to the game, and they tell me that, you know, if we look up on the horizon to the new CBA talks that will be commencing, I would imagine, during, if not right after the next baseball season, if we have a 2021 season, that the owners are bound and determined this time like never before to introduce the thing that Major League Baseball doesn't have, that every other major professional sports league in this country does have, and that is a salary cap. So we've got potential Armageddon coming up here. Forget about, you know, these negotiations are going to look like, you know, a Sunday walk in the park compared to what could potentially be coming up. Your thoughts on a salary cap, your thoughts on if it has been good for the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and would it be good for the better interests of baseball, given the exploding salaries and the costs which have obviously been, you know, passed on to the consumer, and it's becoming harder and harder for people to go to as many games. A lot of people have been priced out of parks. Your thoughts on a salary cap, if it's worked in the other leagues, and if you can see it successfully being implemented in Major League Baseball.
I don't see the salary cap being a magical pill for baseball. If it's implemented, fine. If not, fine. You still have much bigger problems. The NBA players trust the league. You know why? Because the NBA players see how the players are marketed going back to the Michael Jordan era, the Magic Johnson era. They trust Adam Silver. They trusted David Stern. There has not been the same amount of trust NFL players toward Roger Goodell, mostly because they don't trust Goodell when it comes to punishing players for player conduct issues. But you just saw the NFL and the union get a deal done just before the pandemic, because everybody realizes we've got a pot of gold here. We've got the hottest sport. Every TV network and streaming company wants us. We'd be fools not to cut this deal now, although it was, once again, another owner-friendly deal. See, these baseball owners can't get it right. They've been on the short end of this labor stick for decades. And I brought you back to the 90s when Seeley Reinsdorf decided they wanted to be Hawks. Well, didn't work out for them, did it? And they almost killed the game, along with the players at the time. I'm not just blaming the owners, but I just think the owners have never gained the players' trust. How would you like to be Mike Trout right now, Garrett Cole, the two highest paid players in the game? And I would argue that on any list of top well-known athletes in America, you could do a poll of young people, older people, neither one would be in the top 10. It would be filled with basketball players, football players, maybe a couple of global soccer superstars. Mike Trout, godsend to baseball. And I don't see any commercials. Garrett Cole comes into his own. He should be a major American cultural figure. Nobody even knows who he is right now. So if I'm the players, I'm looking at Major League Baseball and going, you guys are screwing up the game. You allowed us to be involved in scandals, a sign-stealing scandal, without ever investigating it in a big way 3 years ago when it was starting. You have allowed the games to last too long, although the players are largely to be blamed for that. It's just a crap show, Major League Baseball. And at the core of it is the lack of trust between the players and the owners. Neither side trusts the other, when I would show you the model of trust would be the NBA and how they're trying to work out things right now, and whether they're going to get going or not in July remains to be seen. But there seems to be very cordial talks, and they're very smart at the NBA. Adam Silver would never drop a bomb on the NBA players. First of all, their union deal has been done for the long term. But Silver, going back to Donald Sterling, how he handled that mess very quickly, the players like and respect Adam Silver. The baseball players don't respect Rob Manfred one bit.
You know, speaking of the NBA, and I love the NBA. I know you love the NBA. We've both followed it for years, decades. I'm a huge NHL fan as well, Jay. I've already said that under the scope that they want to continue Major League Baseball season, it holds virtually no appeal for me whatsoever. And the same thing I can say and have said on the show concerning the NBA and the NHL. Now, the NHL announced just yesterday they're going to come back. They want to come back. They're going to have a couple of hub cities. They're going to expand the playoffs. They're going to hand the Stanley Cup out in late September, Jay. Okay, we're going to be playing hockey in August and September. And I don't want that, Jay. I don't want it. And the thing that I said last night on the show, Jay, I said, you know who I hope doesn't win the Stanley Cup this year if they get back on the ice? A team that has never won the Stanley Cup before. Because to win it under such a bizarre atmosphere and environment with no fans, I mean, it would just be horrible. So whoever wins the Stanley Cup this year, I hope it's a team that's won it before. But the same thing with the NBA, Jay. Send them down to Mickey Mouse World in Orlando, and every team's going to be down there, and no fans. And again, it's just so bizarre, off-kilter, Twilight Zone stuff. Just scrap the season, hit the reset button, and come back in 2021 or later this year when you start your 2020-21 season. But, of course, they're not going to do this because there's still television money out there that they want to get, and if they can grab it, they're going to do everything in their power to take it.
Well, the biggest reason we don't do it is health. I'm still not convinced that Major League Baseball, and they're going to need something like 250,000 tests. Granted, the testing capacity in this country is in a much better situation than it has been, but there are still hotspot areas that could use those tests, and Major League Baseball isn't even going to test players daily, and yet they need 250,000 tests. The NBA doesn't need nearly that number of tests, but obviously if you're opening up this cocoon bubble, whatever you want to call it, quarantine bubble, they're calling it a campus in Orlando, and if you're doing that and opening it up, and now I see tonight they're going to open it up to certain family members as well. My God, I saw Jared Dudley of the Lakers say in a conference call, he's a player rep, that, yeah, people are going to be allowed to leave this bubble and go into Orlando if they want. Really? I think we could very easily have an outbreak, and we could very easily have a serious situation that nobody is even talking about. So in addition to what you're saying, the fact that there won't even be fans there, and I think right now fans, you need to start respecting how important you are to the environment of a game. Too many fans are saying, I don't care if there are any fans in the stands. Fans are what create the excitement and the environment that we all love about sports, and I think you're underestimating the importance of your bodies and your noise and your energy in these places. Because without it, we're watching. I'm not watching anymore, but these Korean games, it's something, you're right, out of the Twilight Zone. I don't want to watch a quote-unquote NBA playoff series in a bubble. I just don't know what kind of quality of play we're going to be seeing. These guys haven't played in months. They're going to be very awkward inside that bubble. I mean, people think we're suddenly going to get this magical Western Conference final. It's not going to be at all. In fact, I'm very nervous that in the middle of it all, there's going to be an outbreak, and they're going to have to call it off, and we're all going to be wondering just what the hell was all of that about to begin with. Do you really think, folks, that these owners really are doing it for you? Stop deluding yourselves. They don't care about you. They care about the billions they are trying to recoup right now. These are men who are not accustomed to losing their ass, to bleeding financially. And I believe the figure is, if baseball doesn't play, $4 billion is lost this season. If the NBA doesn't finish its season, they lose more than $1 billion. NHL, more than $1 billion. If college football doesn't play, $4 billion. If the NFL doesn't play with fans, still plays games but doesn't play with fans, they're out $5 billion. And if the NFL doesn't play at all this year, you're looking at more than $10 billion in losses. That is why this is happening. No other reason. They're not doing it for you. They're not doing it for the fabric of America. They're doing it because they are bleeding to death financially.
All right, we've got an email for Jay. We're going to go in that direction right now. You got any thoughts, comments, concerns, questions for Jay, of course, talktodino@gmail.com. talktodino@gmail.com. A place that's not far from your original hometown and stomping grounds, Jay, from Erie, Pennsylvania. Gary says this. He says, Jay, growing up in Pittsburgh and becoming a sports writer, I wanted to get his thoughts, Jay's thoughts and opinions on Bob Smyzik. He was a sports writer for the Pittsburgh Press and Post-Gazette for decades. And then he tags this email, Jay, by saying, also, let Jay know I'm still pissed about him leaving the Immaculate Reception game early.
I saw it. That's funny. I saw it. I told you we were walking down the upper deck of the stadium when it developed in front of us. But we didn't leave early. It's just we had no faith, but we were trying to. If you've ever been to Old Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh, you knew what the traffic was like there. I remember Bob Smyzik as a hard-ass baseball writer. Pittsburgh, smaller market, but had its share of tough guy sports writers. Smyzik was one of them, later became a columnist. I thought he was, he had this very dry wit and wouldn't at all hesitate to criticize owners, players, anybody. So I remember that name well from my childhood, and I think Bob Smyzik had a very long career before he got out of the racket, probably in his 70s, I believe.
Yeah, I remember him. Also, Ron Cook is still there at the Post-Gazette, isn't he?
Ron Cook, Gene Collier.
Right.
There's one paper left in Pittsburgh. There's a second one just got. Look, I mean, we're all waiting for every newspaper in America to collapse. I mean, I'm praying for these places, but they have no advertising right now. No. I don't know how they're surviving right now.
All right, so I guess we should get into it now. The residual after effects, the aftershocks of The Last Dance, and it's almost stunning to see how many people have come out since the final episode, Jay, and said Jordan is lying about this, Jordan's twisting the truth about that, Jordan's wrong about this. I don't know. I mean, you know, is Jordan the only one, in your opinion, during that 10-part series that was stretching the truth a little bit about this, that, and the other thing?
These guys all lied. This thing was one big piss pot. Everybody lying back then. This is like old home week to me. I mean, everybody's mad at each other. It's dragging me back to the 90s in the middle of all this. And you're seeing why it was such a miracle that they somehow won six championships when you had all this dysfunction going on and nobody got along. They didn't like Michael. It's the same damn thing. And here comes Horace Grant complaining, and Scotty's mad at Michael, and here comes Sam Smith, and he's calling Michael a liar because he's up the ass of Jerry Reinsdorf, and he does Reinsdorf's dirty work for him. It's just disgusting. I'm in the middle of all this trying to be an independent sports columnist. And when I walked into that Dino in 1991 after the first championship, I was amazed at how smarmy this was. And essentially, Sam Smith, who everybody saw in The Last Dance, he wrote the book about Jordan that offended Jordan because it was the first actual national type of look-see into the dictatorship of Michael, how he could be a tyrant. So Michael didn't like Sam. And Sam and Phil Jackson were tight. And Jerry Reinsdorf and Sam were tight. And Jordan had his own people. And I'm walking in the middle of this realizing this isn't really a sports beat. This is a political back room. And you have these aldermen over here, and they're all sneaky. And you have this big shot over here, Michael Jordan, and he doesn't trust them. And that's basically, I'm glad everybody was able to see what was happening throughout the 90s. And the fact that they're all coming out this week firing mud at each other is just so perfect. It symbolized exactly what went down back then. But to me, for Sam Smith to go on these radio shows all over the country last week, Dino, and it came after Reinsdorf came. This is how it works. Reinsdorf was upset at the way The Last Dance ended, and he said so. He goes on NBC Sports Chicago. He owns 50% of it, okay? He comes out of his cave, goes on there and says, I'm not happy with Michael because hey, that's not how it happened. What do you mean that's not how it happened? When the season started, Jerry Krause told Phil Jackson, you could go 82-0 and you won't be the coach of this team. So Jackson coined the phrase, the last dance. And Jordan said, I'm not going to play past this season. And they played the whole season. 8 months went by without Reinsdorf trying to intercede. And then when they finally win in the end, he tries to throw Hail Mary and claim, oh, let's bring Phil back and Michael back. By then, Jordan, Jackson, long disgusted with the whole thing. 8 months have passed, and that was the end of it. Now, Reinsdorf comes out last week, fires at Jordan, pretty much calls him a liar, and then he summons his henchman, Sam Smith, to do this radio tour last week and call Michael a liar. Point blank, called him a liar. And it just reminded me, this isn't journalism. This is Sam Smith, a writer right now at Bulls.com, doing the dirty work for the guy who pays his salary at Bulls.com.
Right.
And I was so disgusted, I wrote a column for Jason Barrett's media site on it. It's out this week, Barrett Sports Media. I just basically call out Sam as the biggest scumbag who ever lived because, Dino, you don't get into this business to suck the penis of the owner. You don't do that. But that's what Sam Smith has been doing forever. And the fact that he would go on radio shows and call Jordan a liar to do Reinsdorf's dirty work just blew me away. This guy has no morals, ethics, anything, and he draws a paycheck from Reinsdorf, and he thinks he can sneak that by me? No. No way.
I did not watch, admittedly, I didn't watch any of the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, that whole thing with the Tiger and Phil and over the weekend. I don't know if you did. If you did, was it a nice diversion? Did you get anything out of it? Did you like it?
It was funny.
Yeah?
It was great. These four guys were thrown together, and it was, you know, some great things are going to come out of this pandemic in regard to sports, I hope. I mean, right now, I've got blue sky in Los Angeles because we have no pollution, and we don't have cars on the road. And in regard to sports, maybe we now can make the miking up of athletes a permanent thing. Let's do it for all the major golf tournaments. Let's have the miking of the athletes. If we have that technology today, let's do it. Because that's what made, and I know it was for fun and for charity, and that sort of banter was going on. but do it for the final round of the Masters. I want to hear what Tiger is saying to his caddy. And forget about that's private stuff. No, we're past that now. This is what we, if you want to keep people really interested in sports moving forward, mic up everybody. That's what happened on Sunday. Of course, Brady was playing horribly. Even Charles Barkley, who was the commentator, took a shot at him. Of course, Charles, a hopeless hacker. And next thing you know, Brady is holing out from the fairway, and he says, suck on that, Chuck. And the whole thing was highly entertaining. And then they pull out a $20 million check for coronavirus relief. I thought that was the best sports moment by far of the pandemic.
See, I could go for the miking up for golf. I think that's the perfect sport for it, Jay. But I don't want that kind of up-close intimacy like in a baseball dugout or out on the field or miking NFL quarterbacks and things like that. I just think it's too much of a distraction to me. I'd rather just watch the game, and the natural sounds of the game are enough for me as far as basketball, hockey, and football and baseball are concerned. But in golf, I think it would be a terrific addition to a golf telecast to have some of the, if not all of the participants mic'd up.
But we're not going to have those natural sounds anymore. If they proceed with sports without fans, that's a nice substitute for not having any crowd noise. I would love to hear the manager talking. Well, I guess he can't walk out there anymore.
But I would love to hear
the manager talking to his bench coach about the kind of move he might want to make here. Yeah, I think sports needs to open it up here. They're fighting for their own survival in the future as an entertainment element in this country. And yeah, the ratings have been good for NASCAR and for that golf outing the other day. And sure, people are clamoring for sports. I get it. But without fans in the stands, it's going to sound weird. So why not counter that? The TV network should really find the most, the funniest characters, the most compelling people, and mic them and make it a regular feature, not just something we try every now and then. And you know, if Greg Popovich doesn't like it, then retire, Pop. We need to move into the future. So I don't know. Just thinking out loud here, but it was great. Brady saves himself the other day, but Tom Brady earlier in the week, decides to promote some sort of supplement to fight the virus, which seemed terribly distasteful and tone deaf, and he got slammed in Boston, a town that is very quickly turning against Brady. And he, it's like he has a new lease on life in Florida. He's got some sort of midlife crisis going, and he's playing in parks, practicing in parks in Tampa when he shouldn't be. And it's a new Tom Brady. And I don't know, maybe I don't like this Tom Brady as much, or maybe I will like him more. I don't know. Right at the moment, he shouldn't be introducing these sort of products at a very sensitive time.
23 to the hour, hour two. It's the great Jay Mariotti with me tonight. And also coming up top of hour three, folks, it's going to be Brandon Smith from the website altmarket.com. So stay tuned for that. Jay, we've talked about the NHL, the NBA. We've obviously talked about Major League Baseball. You've also commented a little bit on college football and what may be coming up here. But, the National Football League has really danced themselves through all of these virus raindrops over the last couple of weeks and months. Of course, this all took place. It originated at a time when the NFL was out of season, but it's been full bore go, full steam ahead. They had the draft, went off without a hitch, did it virtually, right? They had free agency, went off without a hitch. Everybody was happy with that. The schedule release, that happened when it was supposed to happen, and now they're talking about, the reports out there, we anticipate fans in the stadiums from the jump week one, also for the preseason games coming up in August. We've heard from various athletes in all of these other sports, the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball. The interesting thing that I find, Jay, is that, we haven't heard really from a single NFL player who has expressed either concern, a little bit of reservation, trepidation about, going back and playing, what with the virus situation, based upon whether or not you want to think it's all it's chalked up to be, or it's something that's a little bit less. But I'm amazed that we have not heard. And the NFL itself, again is going full speed ahead here, and acting as though, hey, when we kick off, it's going to be business as usual. Nothing's going to change, and fans are going to be in the stadiums. But we haven't heard from any players in the league, not a single one, to the best of my knowledge.
Well, it reflects what's going on in our country. We have people who wear masks and people who don't. It's a cultural divide right now. I could go to certain southern states and they're open, and you can go eat in restaurants in Florida, and they're going to open up Disney World in a few weeks. And out here, we're still very cautious, and nobody knows what to think right now. The NFL players don't have to react yet, but I think, Dino, there's a certain machismo attached to this. Nobody wants to be the first guy to say, I'm scared. Damian Lillard, the basketball star, came out yesterday and said, look, I'm not going to risk anything if our team isn't in position to make the playoffs. I'm not going to just play out a season in Orlando. And I don't think it was a very popular thing for him to say. Remember, we're dealing with a lot of young people in these sports who don't think this is serious. To this day, they think it's an old people's problem, and they're invincible, and they're not going to get it. Well, that's just foolish, because anybody with a brain right now realizes that athletes, coaches, support staff, they're not going to be safe within these various capsules of quarantine. I don't care what the leagues say about diagnostic testing and airtight protocols. They're not going to be safe. Even Silver has said there's going to be some risk. Manfred has said the same thing. So Goodell right now, and you're right, the NFL is lucky in the sense that it's still only May. They can take their time and watch how it develops. But it's rather silly for anybody to actually believe that in the first week of September, we're going to have fans in stadiums watching football players in a full contact sport with sweating and tackling, and really with no virus or no vaccine coming anytime soon, maybe 2 years away. Really? I know we're all wishfully thinking and trying to talk sports back into existence. Just use common sense. I don't know how in the hell you're going to play a football game with the current line of scrimmage without somebody passing on the virus and there possibly being an outbreak. Same goes for the NBA. Close up, contact every play. We've already had at least 10 NBA players contract the virus, including 3 in one Utah Jazz-Detroit Pistons game, and yet, oh, we'll be okay in this bubble. I hope so, because it's a life and death situation, and you're right, nobody's talking about it. They want to wish it away, and that's just not very bright.
Well, out where you are in Los Angeles, in that area, Jay, just coming across the wire here just a little while ago, the Rams announced today that their preseason schedule is going to go on. This begins, I'm reading now off of this report, with an unofficial christening of SoFi Stadium on Friday, August 14th, which is not that long, not far away. That night, the Saints are scheduled to visit the new venue. Rams will play 3 of their preseason games at home. The announcement, which includes an invitation to buy tickets for the games, does acknowledge the possibility that the games won't proceed or that fans won't be present. According to the Rams, quote, if games are canceled or played without spectators, any tickets purchased directly from the Rams or through Ticketmaster for Rams home games will be refunded within 30 days of cancellation or a decision to play without spectators.
Well, that's just enough time to accrue some interest, right? That's just disgusting. But they just march on as if this isn't happening, and it'll instantly go away next week. Stan Kroenke, you know him well, built this $6 billion stadium by himself. He got a loan from the NFL, but the state of California didn't help. He is already losing his ass because Taylor Swift was supposed to open the stadium. She canceled all the concerts, Guns N' Roses, Kenny Chesney, all canceled in the opening months of the stadium about 4 miles from where I sit. So there's Kroenke saying, my God, I'm not going to recoup any of this money. So this is a desperation move by him. Yes, we're going to play football. Buy our tickets. You'll be the first ones to see the new stadium. It's just so insensitive right now to do that. I can't imagine anybody being foolish enough to put your credit card in that computer and do that yet, Dino. The last I saw, one of these Ticketmaster companies said the NFL tickets are going fast. I, I hope they refund it. There was an issue a while back about the refunds weren't quick. I think there was a settlement in a class action suit where a court ruled that all of these companies need to be transparent about their refund policies. And yeah, I do think they have to get the money back in 30 days, but why even announce that today? Are we really better off as a country right now than Rudy Gobertonite? I really don't know if we've made any great advances in terms of the coronavirus. 100,000 Americans have died. I don't think the death toll is stopping anytime soon. Granted, there are improvements with the slowdown of the rate and the cases, but we could have very easily another wave of coronavirus, and then what is going to happen to all of these sports? It's going to be worse than what we are living through right now. Dino, when I talk about this, I don't want to sound like a guy who's anti-sports at all. I just want this to be our only wave. I don't want it to come back. And when I see, you know, these scenes on beaches and swimming pools in the Ozarks with 400 people piled into a pool, you're just asking for it to come back again. I want us to develop some normalcy at some point, but if people are stupid and they're going to be COVIDiots, as they're being called, then it's then what? We're going to go through this again later this year and then next year? I don't want to deal with this anymore.
You can make me laugh, Mariotti. You really can. Hey, I'm seeing something here. I'm very pleased with this. I hope we've had something to do with it. You and I do, you know, doing this show and other people who have picked up on it, but you mentioned that you've been writing for Jason Barrett's Barrett Sports Media website. I see that you and a couple of other people have been added to the roles there. You also were on the Felger and Maz show at the 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. You also were on a guy named Bill Michaels, I guess, his show, and people have been wanting to talk with you about The Last Dance and some other things, and it's nice to see you starting to get circulated back out there again, and people seeking you out, man. That's great stuff.
I did probably 25 shows.
Yeah.
It was endless.
That's great stuff.
And it was fun, and every question was about The Last Dance. It was fun to relive that with people, and the guys in Boston, that's a top-rated show, and they're good. You can tell by the questions, they're good. But I did shows everywhere. Nashville, I did a show. It became an inquisitive thing. I heard a lot of younger talk show hosts marveling at this era. And I'm glad to see that in this pandemic, if nothing else, we're bringing back, in documentary form, a great story such as Michael Jordan and the Bulls. And it wasn't just a great story because they won six championships. It was a great story because all they did was fight and they still won six championships. But, Dino, I'm a little concerned, as I also wrote, that we're going to be docked out here. We've got to be careful. Lance Armstrong, Doc, I'm not really seeing anything new so far. We're going to see Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire. Right now, there's one on Quibi about Donald Sterling. Got to be careful here. Let's not make do too much of a good thing here and then oversaturate the documentary landscape. It reminds me sort of when the NHL introduced the Winter Classic, and next thing you know, they're trying to do it three times a year. It just settle down here, ESPN. You hit the jackpot on The Last Dance. Let's not trot out documentaries, you know, every week, but that's apparently what they're going to do for a while.
Jeff is in Florida, and he emails me at talktodino@gmail.com. Dino, love the segments with you and Jay. They're getting better and better every week. He says, I know that Jay has also done talk radio in the past, and I'd like to know if he enjoys doing talk radio versus writing, or does he enjoy scripting columns more than doing a live talk radio show?
Love sports conversations. What Dino and I do here elevates the form. And I love talking sports with people who know sports. Even people like to argue with me. I mean, if a fan back in Chicago would stop me in a restaurant or a bar or something, I'd sit there and we'd engage and sometimes get pretty loud, but I enjoyed it. But the written word still has impact in that it doesn't, unlike radio words, although, you know, now we can preserve that stuff on tape by computer, but the written word still can, a powerful column still has some weight. It resonates. I still believe people want to sit down and read something that's compelling. It's a lot easier to listen to me and Dino because we're conversing and it's probably more fun. And we touch upon 8 or 9 or 10 topics, whereas in a column, it's just one topic and may bore you to death. They're different art forms. When I did a TV show on ESPN, you had to get your point out in 10 seconds or the guy would mute you, which was silliness. Dino lets me talk for 3 or 4 minutes. Dino probably wishes he had a mute button. By the way, you should bring one out next week. Just mute me. Enough.
I think, but I think,
hey,
Jay...
Where you would, and then call Woody and have him talk.
Jay, I think what he's talking about, though, more to the point than being on my show, is he said that I know that Jay individually did sports talk radio previously. Do you like doing sports radio or do you like writing? One of the two.
I like all of it.
Okay.
I started as a columnist and then a radio guy. It was in Denver. They put me, it was my first radio gig. And then every city I was in, I ended in Chicago, I did 2 shows. And later on ESPN radio, but as often happened in the last 25 years in this industry, people started as writers and then ventured on into radio and then into TV. The two guys in Boston, former sports writers. People at ESPN, all up and down the roster at ESPN, started with writing backgrounds. So what do I enjoy more? I would say I enjoy them equally. This is a blast doing a radio show with you. I can tell you that it really what it comes down to, as you and I have talked about often, it's who you're working for. If you're working for somebody who lets you fly on the radio, it's awesome. If you're working for somebody at a newspaper that doesn't tinker with your column because he's in bed with the sports owner, it's awesome as well, equally awesome. When you're on TV and you're Stephen A. Smith and they let you ramble on, I'm sure it's awesome for him. But it all depends on the paradigm of what you have in front of you and whether it all fits with the guy you're working for. Because if that guy is compromised politically somewhere, it's absolutely hell to work on the radio. And Dino and I both have had situations where we have been compromised by assholes we've worked for who have ethical compromises somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it all depends on your individual situation.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if you look at, I think that in any occupation, unless you have the backing of the person that has placed you in the position to perform, you're always going to run into problems. I mean, if somebody is programming a radio station based upon their own individual worldview, and somebody comes onto the air that is hired that is, the complete opposite of that, you're eventually going to run into significant problems. And the same thing, Jay, is as you said, in the newspaper industry as well. I mean, if somebody's going to fuck with your column and your freedom of expression and your creativity, I mean, they're going to stifle you and they're not going to get the essence of what Jay Mariotti brings to his columns in terms of the way that you report on sports. And so I guess what I'm saying is if somebody hires Jay Mariotti or somebody hires Dino Costa, they get us. They understand what we do and the ways that we do. And it's just not us, of course. It's everybody. Everybody's got their own individual little niche here and there. And so it's, unless somebody realizes that, hey, I don't have to agree with Jay Mariotti to hire Jay Mariotti. I know Jay Mariotti writes an interesting column, and he compels people to go to the paper and read it, and people react to Jay Mariotti. That's not to say that I'm hiring Jay Mariotti because I agree with everything Jay Mariotti thinks and what he writes about. That's not the way that you should go about a hiring process.
But I think that's the way it's done today. I don't know what a market manager is. That position didn't exist when I was doing radio, 10, 12 years ago. But now you have market managers who report directly to Entercom and to these other, iHeart. And it's all streamlined, and it's all very safe and careful. And if you cross the line, you're gone, buddy. Or if you make too much money now, you're gone, buddy. It's different. You and I were fortunate enough to be in the rollicking days where everybody wanted that big rating. And guys like you and I always have had big ratings. But now it's homogenized. I don't even know if some of these places care about ratings. They're trying to preserve their advertising relationships.
Right.
And if you're at a sports station, chances are that advertising relationship is aligned with what? A sports franchise. So the sports franchise is allowed to make the call on who's on the radio. And believe me, they don't want Dino or me on the radio. They want a puppet who is, we got a shot to maybe get the 8th seed in the, we're only 8 points out of an 8th seed. I couldn't do that kind of radio. I'd shoot myself. So, look, if you want the real goods, you get it right here. I'm not saying other sports talk show hosts can't deliver the kind of show they want, but this show where we're so raw and we say what we want doesn't exist in modern sports radio. And that's one of the reasons why their ratings, with the exception of Boston, New York, I think Minneapolis, certain towns have pretty good ratings. Chicago doesn't. L.A. has abysmal talk of sports radio ratings. Well, it's as if they don't really want the ratings. They're just trying to hang on for dear life and not piss off the advertisers.
You're right, Jay. The thing is, with many of these radio stations, at the end of the day when everybody goes home, did we have any fires today? No? Okay, it was a great day. What are the ratings? Well, that's secondary to our concern. Did we get through the week without any fires and the red phone didn't ring once? Okay, nobody complained about anything? Another great week. What about the ratings? We don't care about that. I in this day and age, I feel so bad for so many program directors out there. Now, there are exceptions to every rule, Jay, but in terms of program directors and having a direct impact on programming with hiring, firing, tweaking, revising, doing stuff like that, they are at the mercy, unfortunately, program directors, to the most important person at the well majority of commercially run AM and FM radio stations in this country today. They're at the mercy of something called the sales manager. The sales manager, in most cases, at radio stations today holds much more sway over the direction of the station than any program director does. And again, I say that there are exceptions to this rule, but you're right. It's not about ratings. It's not about street buzz. It's not about, lighting a fire and capturing people's imagination. It's about none of that. It's about, did we get through another day issue-free here? No advertisers called to complain. Nobody wrote a bad email about what they heard that this host said and that host said. No, we want to employ a cabal of talk show hosts who, never paint outside the lines, never deviate from the script. And if we get through each week successfully and there's no, the alarms aren't ringing anywhere, well, it's another good week at our radio station. Ratings
and
be,
those alarms,
be damned.
By the way, can be sounded by sports owners. And that's what I dealt with in Chicago. My ratings were excellent. But too many times, here comes the Jerry Reinsdorf hotline, and I was always to blame. I'll tell you a story. Hawk Harrelson, who was always, he was like Sam Smith. He was a Reinsdorf mouthpiece. Anytime the White Sox, Reinsdorf, pissed off at me, he'd sick Hawk after me. So Hawk, in the middle of a game in Anaheim in July, would rip me for 3 innings or something. So I'm in Minneapolis one night before a game. I'm writing. I'm in the dining room of the press box in Minneapolis. And I feel this big thump in my chair. Somebody ran into my chair from behind. And it was a pretty good whack. It's Harrelson. And he walks by, and he goes to the soda fountain, and I go up, and, I say, hey, look, pal, I don't care what you say about me, but if you do something like that one more time, I'm going to rip that damn beak off your face. We're very prominent nose, Hawk Harrelson, and you can do what you want, Mariotti. All right, so that was it. Nobody saw it. After the game, everybody's on deadline in the press box. And maybe the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen, here comes Harrelson and his partner, Darren Jackson. And Harrelson's, come on, Mariotti, get out of here, I'll kick your ass. And all of these writers in Minnesota, what the hell is it? And they're saying, shut up, get out of here. And they had to have somebody pull him out of there. So the next day, my talk show on the White Sox station, The program director, who reminded me of the guy in the Stern movie
Pig Vomit, whatever his name Pig was. Vomit. This was on.
I don't want you at all.
Jake, this was on.
Len Weiner is his name. I don't want you at all mentioning what happened last night. I said, it's already out there. It's all over town, dude. You don't want me talking about it? No. So I didn't. Why? Because the White Sox ordered him not to. So, you know, there were probably about 10 stories like that where I want to tell what happened in the situation, and they were going to allow the White Sox to spin it their way, and you have no chance in that situation.
Yeah.
So at the end of the year, when I popped this, you know, 4.8 rating, which for Chicago sports midday was a revelation, they're trying to paint me as somebody who didn't get a good rating. And then when the rating pops in, they go, oh, well, he was a bad guy. It just... You would not have believed how treacherous and dirty that stuff was. And it leads to your point. It has nothing to do with how good your show is, how good the talk banter is, how good the rating is. It has to do with them appeasing Reinsdorf, who in the end ended up taking his teams to the other station anyway. So that's my latest story.
That was on WMVP you were on, right?
That was, yeah, AM 1000, which is still there. And Yeah, ESPN. And the funny thing was, at the time, I'm on Around the Horn every day, and it's becoming a very successful show, and yet the ESPN radio station in Chicago's not taking advantage of that. They're fighting me. The whole thing was warped. It made zero sense in regard to synergy or any. Why don't you take advantage of the guy who's, you know, seen by 800,000 a day on TV?
You
appease the man, Jerry Reinsdorf. That's how it works. That's one of the reasons I like writing for Jason Barrett. This is an industry website. It's not something that sports fans are reading. It's CEOs at Fox Sports are reading. I'm telling some dirty little secrets in these columns, and I'm sure some people are not very happy reading them. Tough. Somebody's got to tell the truth.
All right, Jay. Another great week, my friend. We do it again next Wednesday. Be well, and we'll talk again.
Likewise.
Thanks, brother.
Dino.
All right, that's Jay Mariotti. Did great, Mr. Joshua. Jay Mariotti on the Dino Costa Show, of course. On this midweek Wednesday show, 2 hours in. I think we're going overtime tonight. Maybe. We've been doing a lot of the overtime thing here lately, right? Maybe again tonight. 2 hours in. We've got Brandon Smith coming up next from altmarket.com. Another conversation with him.